What I mentioned about the bear, I got a fella.
Wait just a minute. No, go ahead.
A friend of mine, he came around and said that this coon's eating his corn. Had some vitamin C drop, and I let him take a trap around there to catch the coon, you know. Yes, I had a few steep traps, you know, just a few. So that he went ahead and cat took it, and I said, now if you catch a fox or a bobcat, I want it. Well, he caught a young bobcat. And I got it and went around there to get it. We put it in a bag that he scalded his hogs with. And so that when they brought it around now, then the marshal, Mr. Noel, wanted this bobcat. And I told him he'd cat around his house, keep it a while. I'm going to take it out of the barrel. He gouged holes in the back of it. Then he said he'd pay for the barrel and gouged holes in it. And he didn't do it. Then he didn't want the bobcat. Then I had to pay for the cage and take it back. And then they messed up the barrel and didn't do it. And I borrowed this barrel from this friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to get one now to replace the barrel.
Oh, that's too bad.
And I helped a lot of bears around there, but they all got holes in them. And he wants it about when he goes to dress his hogs when he kills butcher one.
Well, how bad is it, is the drum?
It's just two holes about that big in is all. At the end.
Yeah. Well, I could use one like that.
You can?
Yeah. I might swap a good one for one with holes in it.
Okay. See, I can cut the head of it out, you see. It's a good barrel. It was a good barrel. And I want to give him a good one back in the place of it, you see. Uh-huh. He said let it go, but, you know, I don't feel that way about it, you know.
What was the fella going to do with the bobcat?
He wanted to keep it and let people see it and take it back up in West Virginia. They didn't have any bobcats up there.
A waste of time.
Yeah.
Well, you couldn't use a bobcat.
No. Well, you see, what we did, we had a bunch of young dogs, you know, and he brought it back, you know, and kept it, and I showed it to people. It cost us too much to keep one. I've kept them back when I was in business for advertising, you see.
Yeah.
And so we catted out and catted all of our young dogs, and all of our old dogs but one of mine that had a little cancer on her that she... was only the old trained dog that we had available.
Mm-hmm.
So we were going where we run cats anyway, and they don't know where we were going to cat. I said, we're going to cat back over there close to Flemington, where that the dogs used to be in, and they'll come back and they'll strike another one when they catch this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, we should hunt a while, but they all of them wanted to turn out loose first.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, it won't last long.
Oh.
And they didn't believe it, you know. It was a bad, rough place for it to dodge in. I wanted to get in a bad place. So I turned it loose, and I took my oldest dogs, turned two of them loose, my old 8-year-old dog, one that had a little cancer on one of the udders, and I didn't really want to carry it, but I had to carry it to be sure, you know, that I knew that she didn't break, you know, to get these young dogs started.
Mm-hmm.
And we turned it loose and began to turn all the younger dogs loose, and we had all of them in there. And first thing you know, there's one of the puppies running never drawn before.
Yeah.
And they run about, I think, between 15 and 30 minutes till they caught it.
Oh, but it didn't last long, like you said.
Well, I knew it wasn't safe, you see, but they didn't realize that, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And, a lot of them figured it was an accident. It wasn't an accident. I told them, I says, you fellas don't know. I says, they're just too much high pressure behind it. It couldn't take it.
Hmm.
I says, that old dog is, she don't miss them. And I says, all those young dogs is doing their part.
Mm-hmm.
And so it couldn't run long till they soon caught it and killed it. We'd caught a big one there and run it 2 hours about... months before that.
Mm-hmm.
And it liked to eat my dog, one of my dogs up.
But this was a little one.
Yeah. This was a young cat, and I knew it couldn't do. Well, it run about 2 hours, and eventually got into where that bulldozed up a lot of old trees and got down in a place the dogs couldn't get to it. And the dogs, you know, couldn't get into it. And like eventually they worried him to death and killed him, brought him out.
That's a young one.
No, that was the old
that
big
one. That was the old one, uh-huh.
Well, no, they kill that young one right quick because they're on fire ground, you know.
Mm-hmm.
See, they don't last long to catch them out where they can get to them.
Mm-hmm.
They soon learn how to fight. They know how those claws scratches.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that big one, one of my dogs had fought cats before. He went down in on it, and he'd like to eat him up. He couldn't get to it, and the cat got in position to get the dog, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he went down in there on it. Maybe the other dog was piling in on him, too, you see. Trying to get on there. And
where was it he caught this one, Mr. Weaver?
Caught this cat?
Uh-huh.
It was Mitchell Boyd caught it out there just this side of Stuckey's.
Oh.
On the Interstate 75.
Oh.
See, I couldn't run now. My dog's killed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how did he catch it?
He caught in a steel trap.
Oh, I see.
And, you see, the cat came up there where he was trying to get the corn. I guess he's eating corn too, you know, they will.
Mm-hmm.
And coons are bad to tie up your corn, you know, mm-hmm. when you have corn.
You mean cats will eat corn too?
Yeah. Possums, fox, or nearly anything will eat a little corn.
Eat a little corn.
If they get hungry without food. Now, a fox rather have a rat as any food. And they're worth the great evil around your place.
Yeah.
They catch rats. They don't like fowls, but now bobcats will eat every chicken, duck, or anything you try to have.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recommend people try to save a bobcat.
Mm-hmm.
Because, now fox, I figure they're worth more to us than they do harm. Mm-hmm. Great deal.
Mm-hmm.
You see, they catch the rats. It keeps the rats from catch eating the bird, little birds, and the bird eggs up. You know, all these old grass rats. And did you know that they eat a great deal of your hay? There's grass rats, wood rats out there, eat lots of your grass and hay.
Mm-mm.
They really do in your field.
No, I never.
If you've ever noticed, you get out where there ain't no fox or something to catch them, you see. If you notice, you'll see where rats are run in the bed up out there.
Mm-hmm.
You can have corn out in your field and they'll go to that.
Mm-hmm.
Where I learned this was back watching and experimenting by watching where I could strike a fox when it's scared. In the fall of the year, I could always strike them and we could jump a fox pretty easy to go around a cornfield because rats were feeding on the corn. And it took me a long time to figure that out.
Yeah.
And they'll go there to eat corn, rats will.
Mm-hmm.
Well, coons will go there to eat corn. Well, fox will eat roofnails, a little bit of roofnails mm-hmm. at times.
Not, but when it hardens up, he don't.
Well, fox don't eat it much, it's mostly coons that does that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the worst thing, and muskrats is what works on the corn the most of anything.
Mm-hmm. Oh, me.
But I've had so much experience with all this hunting and training dogs until I don't say too much about it. It doesn't pay because so many people don't believe it and they don't know anything about it, never had no experience.
They don't seem to know how to listen to somebody who's had experience
and pick up stuff, do they?
That's
where I got a great deal of my experience is when I was a little fella, I studied it, and I'd ask my uncles and other hunters
mm-hmm.
what was the best and how was the best to do things. Mm-hmm.
And then you'd listen to them.
Yes, sir.
And then you'd watch what they'd done.
Yeah. And just like if a dog gets sick and carries it to the veterinarian, I find out all I can about that disease and that dog right there keep asking me even questions. Yeah, if you don't, you have to be careful. They don't want to tell you anything.
Yeah.
You got to be kind of shrewd in ways you ask the questions to get them to answer.
Is that right? Well, you know, I find these veterinarians, they'll tell me anything I ask them. But they know half the things they tell me I can't do.
Yeah, and you don't know what to do, you see.
Yeah.
Well, I've had so much experience with the, when we didn't have veterinarians that 25 miles when I was a small boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they had to come. And they'd ride down one day on a horse and ride back the next day, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And or stay a couple of days and nights if it's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And stay there at that with us on the farm. And so I learned a great deal of experience, and I watched all of this stuff. And then to play safe, I experimented about a lot of this and watched it myself.
Yeah, sort of work along with them.
Yeah, you got, you see, and I'd watch, and I found that they all, everybody told me anything, it got it out pretty good.
Well, now, can you look back at your experience and sort of remember where you picked up a lot of these little points?
You can, you, at my age now and the condition my health in, I can remember those things a great deal better than I can things happens today.
Yeah.
Now, that, if you notice old people, that they can talk well on distemper.
Now, that's one of the worst things, isn't it? Now, that gets any dog, hunting dog or any dog.
I hate to say it, I was 100% for vaccinating them for a long time, but I'm 100% against it now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You can vaccinate a dog for distemper. Well, it gives it that distemper. And if that immunity does not affect it, it usually ruins the dog or kills it.
Mm-hmm.
Puppies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have a bunch of other puppies here and vaccinate one or anybody vaccinate over here, and that dog come by here, and he'll give it to every one of these dogs.
Oh, I never thought of that.
It will.
If he's vaccinated, then you won't keep him by himself.
You, and it may ruin him, and it may not.
Yeah.
And lots of, and if he has, already has the germ, and you go ahead and have him vaccinated, it'll kill him. 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
And ruins so many, and it scatters diseases. See, my first experience on that, way back in the 30s, I'd sold all my good dogs. I was sick, and I sold all my good dogs, and just traded for a few little old plug dogs. I don't know what the thoroughbreds. They weren't thoroughbreds or nothing.
Well, now, back in there, in the 20s, you know, you got so busy trading and barbering and all, you didn't have time to keep up your dogs.
Well,
when was that?
I kept my dogs, but I got sick and I didn't feel like hunting them back then. When I cast my dogs and turned them loose, I went and carried enough of food that I could stay and wait. Someone would say, when will we get back? When I get my last dog, is what I tell them.
Yeah.
And if I was in any kind of business, I either close the doors or either I hired someone to stay in my place till I got back.
Yeah.
And because my dogs are just as important to me as my other business was.
Yeah.
And so that I watched everything and checked on it, and if you'd start your young dogs and train your old dogs, your young ones will be like those old ones, more like.
Mm-hmm.
And you can train them to come back and lie down where you can turn them loose at. I've got a tool to do that right now, old ones. If I should lose them, not to go back there 3 or 4, I went back as I was 3 or 4 or 5 days. I'd venture to go back there and I'd find them lying there.
Well, how come you to find out about the distemper then when you let them go?
I had those dogs. I didn't think much about them. There's a lawyer from Tampa, from Gainesville, found out that I was good to look after dogs. And he came down. He had a fine-blooded bird dog. He wanted me to keep this dog. And I looked at it and I told him, I says, I believe if I were you, I'd carry him up and let Dr. Morgan give him distemper treatment. And I believe I'd let him give him it permanent. They said they had permanent treatments, you know, give him about 3 different treatments, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So here's this dog was a year old, about a year, something like that. He's a young dog, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a beautiful bird dog.
Well, now, if a dog gets distemper, he'll do it while he's young, won't he?
You live after the past 2 years old, I hardly ever hurt. However, they don't hurt them.
Yeah.
But they've kept this year the vaccination distemper after this, the past 3 years old.
Oh, will
they? They get that. And that's
you know, next time it's
proven out to me to be able, because I watch it.
Yeah.
Now, I don't tell these things to many people. I'm telling you that.
Yeah.
Because you're interested in it.
I know one of these vets pretty well. And sometime when I see him and he seems like he got a little time, I'm going to sort of raise that question about it.
Just watch him when you ask him a question.
Yeah.
You can tell from his expression. I can look at you and tell when I ask you a question what it's taking, how it takes it.
He give me the straight of it as he sees it.
Yeah, they usually do. Now, vaccinating dogs for rabies, they say that it'll give them 1 9 out of 10 will give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't see what 1 out of 10 of dogs ever have it that's not vaccinated.
Well, now, you haven't been treating your dogs then for distemper since way back there.
No, I treat them on later after that, but I've carried them to the veterinarians and I found that what they're doing didn't do them any good. After they have a distemper and that germ, you have got to watch that.
Mm-hmm.
And if they give them those shots, it may have a reaction on it and kill them.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you don't know they've got it.
Yeah.
But they still will give you the shots. They get paid for that, you know. You can watch it. They're just like any medical doctor.
Yeah.
They like the dollar a little bit, you know.
Yeah, they got to make a living.
That's their way of making a living, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to say too much, you know. Of course, talking to you, of course, if anyone else hear this, a lot of people wouldn't believe it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to believe it.
No.
I didn't finish telling about the bird dog.
Yeah.
He, all at once, that bird dog began to quit eating, flat up on eating, began to look how to do bad. I kept watching him. All at once, he just burst out in big blisters and just went to running.
Mm.
And I done all I could for him, just carried him back to the veterinary. And I was going off on my vacation, and I told my ex-wife to write this veterinary. I was pretty sick then. And she didn't do it. So I carried to the veterinary, and I thought I stayed about 7 months while I was gone, up in the mountains. The doctor said I need to go to the mountains, but that wasn't what I needed. I had all afraid of stomach, you know, instead of what they thought it was.
Oh.
Thought it was chronic malaria, you see. So, I thought he was notified that he carried his dog to the veterinary, and when I found it out, he written me a letter, and he was sore. The veterinary, I told him what to get in, the doctor to get in when he got treated the dog, you see. It was to turn it back to him, you see, to notify him that he had the dog and what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, boy, he rumped me up and down the back for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing right, but my wife supposed to have written this man, and I didn't feel like riding,
mm-hmm.
to tell you the truth. And I thought she'd ride, and she didn't do it.
Yeah.
And so he sent me $16 check for taking care of his dog. And when it come in, that check came in, you see. I knew he didn't owe me anything. Well, I asked my wife, I said, did you write, I've forgotten the lawyer's name, in town, Miami. I said, did you write him? To him, he has a dog and it ruined his dog.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what happened to mine? He gave it to every one of those in the kennel.
Oh, Lord.
And he gave it to them. And it didn't kill none of mine, and they wasn't worth spending money on them. And they got over it, practically over it.
I didn't know a dog ever recovered from distemper.
Oh, yes, you owe these dogs mine, and they'll just hide it.
And recover from it.
Yeah, and if the weather ain't too bad, I won't lose one. But it happened to hit them in the freeze, and lots of people has done me dirty about that. They poisoned some of them.
Oh,
finally,
yeah.
The sick kids up around poisoning them.
Yeah.
And that's hard for me to tell what.
Yeah.
How they do that. They poisoned one of my dogs twice and three of them right there in my yard. And I happened to come in just as the dog fell. And I don't know whether it had to drink water or not. And I rushed in the house and I use fried meat and grease, canned. Keep it canned up all the time. And one of them gets it, these small coffee jars, I'll give it a half. If I can get it to take the whole one, I'll give it the whole jar. And in 15 minutes, it'll be up.
Why, Mr. Weaver.
Now, that ain't no kidding. And snake bites are the same way. If you can get that grease in them, and if it's not going right to the brains or to the heart, if it's got to go through the stomach, that grease will kill that poor, and I'll cure seven.
Why, Mr. Weaver.
Now, and a lot of people don't want me to tell these things, and they don't want to believe it.
Yeah.
But it'll work.
Well, I can see how the poison would do it, because that's in the stomach.
Yeah. And if you can get it in there, you can stop it with the poison either, but the rattlesnake bite, I think that... I don't believe on a rattlesnake. I wouldn't want to take responsibility of saying that if it goes to the brains or heart first, if it goes to the heart before it goes to the stomach, I don't know whether that would kill it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But one of them was bit down here on the leg there and kept running, and his leg done swollen up to here when I seen him and seen him carrying the leg and see could tell it was swollen. And I eventually caught him and brought him in. And it looked like for a day or two he'd die, but I'd give him sweet milk and that and raw eggs, take him off of water and raw eggs and everything. For a snake bite.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to take him off of water. Take him off of water for a poison, too. Be sure to keep water away from him. Give him sweet milk and raw eggs and that fried meat grease for either one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good for the distemper, too.
And you keep that fried meat grease there handy.
Cross River sticks over here, I seen one, I heard one of my dogs, main dogs, she's close to 10 years old. And she'd been snake bit once before and poisoned twice. Been poisoned one time before that, and I saved her with that grease. So that she quit barking. I knew there was something wrong, and the other fellow drove off and left me, and I had to wait for him to drive back around. He come back around, and she'd already found me. And sure, she couldn't walk hard. She had got something bitter on her leg right there.
Mm-hmm.
She had something bad.
Mm-hmm.
And just a shake and her hair done turned up.
Yeah.
And I started walking on, and I knew I couldn't lead her because she was in too bad a shape. And this fellow happened to drive back there and pick me up right quick. I said, just let the rest of them go. They'll be here. And mine will all stay. And your dog will stay with them. And let's carry out the Micanopy just as quick as we can. We got up there and I filled her full of that grease, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Came back to you. Next day, a fellow told me that, seen her. Next day, a fellow seen her that afternoon. He says, that dog's going to have puppies by tomorrow.
Why, Mr. Weaver?
Yeah, I said, now that ain't what's the matter with that dog. She's not even bred. I said, a snake bit her. And even her udder swollen from it. She's swollen all over. And she didn't die after I got that grease and stuff in her.
And she got over. You could almost afford to carry some of that stuff with you whenever you go out.
Should cat. Sometimes I do, but should cat all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And have it. I did Fairfield too, got bit, and I had about 11, 12 o'clock that night, and it was 10 o'clock the next day before I got him in to make an open. And doggone if I didn't save him. One got bit up there, one got bit in the mouth.
I don't know how they'd do that. If that's the worst place, right in there. Oh, that gets you.
Well, if they can lick the place, they get a lot of that poison out.
Oh, yeah.
That'll throw it out. Mm-hmm. If you can put something on the place, they can lick it, you can put something on it.
I had a bee sting me on the lip there one time, a little honeybee. I bit into an apple,
mm-hmm.
and he was right there.
Yeah.
And you know what? It just about knocked me out.
I reckon it did.
Yes, sir.
Right there on that tender part of your lip, and around the hit one of these nerves around
yeah.
your eyes, or do it too.
Yeah.
And make it swell when it won't swell nowhere else.
Well, I want you to let your dogs run a little bit now.
Well, I've got so much started on this here until.
Now that's interesting, Mr. Weaver. Now start that over again. That's interesting.
I've always thought, in talking to people and meeting people, that it would be better to be nice, talk quiet,
mm-hmm.
and with a soft toned voice,
mm-hmm.
that would have, and be nice to people, than it was to be overbearing.
Yeah, and jerky and all.
Yeah, and trying to be smart. I never did think that when I was a kid that it looked good to talk and fuss and do dirty things.
Well, I was saying to you, you know, you don't have to change your manner when you are saying something, you know, if you're going to tape, because just your usual manner is just interesting.
Well, I try to be this, talk like this all the time.
I
figured that was what you wanted, a nicer way.
Yeah.
Of expressing yourself.
Yeah.
It makes it better to dogs and cats are supposed to do that. People are not supposed to do that.
Now, what's that?
I try to never get mad or hurt anybody's feelings if I can help it.
Mm-hmm.
Because dogs and cats are supposed to do that. People are not supposed to do it. They're supposed to help each other.
Well,
do something for each other instead of doing something against them.
Do you figure there's a right smart fighting out amongst the cats and all? Bomb cats and all?
They fight too. Dogs fight.
Yeah.
You got to train them to not fight.
Oh. Your hunting dogs, you got to train them.
You got to not let them fight.
Or else they'll get out there and fight.
They'll fight each other and they get to hating each other instead of loving each other.
They will.
Yes, sir. They sure will. It's just like cattle. You can turn cattle out there, and the strangers, they get to fighting. If you can get in there and get them to get the mind, you got to get the mind off of that. They're not as quick to get off of as people is, you know.
Well, I tell
my dogs down there and watch them, so I feed them together.
You do?
Yeah. And sometimes they'll jump on it, they'll want to eat a hook, try to eat it all to keep them from getting in it.
Yeah.
They're the same thing.
Why, some of these cows, Mr. Weaver, got so they eat so fast, you just can't imagine.
Yeah.
And then another will be standing there, sort of taking small bites, you might
say.
Well,
now, if you'll notice it, if you can feed those that eat slow, will get along better and on less feed.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
No.
And people will, too.
Yeah.
If you won't eat too fast, it's better for you.
Oh, yes, it's better for people.
It's better for stock. Or anything.
These people tell you, you know, you just take them and they'll take care of themselves. They'll fight it out. They'll fight it out all right, but some of them won't get nothing.
Yeah, well, the best thing to do is, see, some of them are fighting and the others are getting all the food.
Yeah.
You get to doing that. And you have got to study the nature of them. And if they go to fighting or go to bothering, if you can get out there and keep that in back a little bit, it'll quit that a great deal if you learn it's got to eat. Wait, and it'll eat instead of wanting to fight.
Well, now, you're going to let your dogs run now a little bit.
Well, let me cut it off. Here. I'd like to tell you, I'll not take too long on this. I want to tell you, olden way back yonder in the teens.
All right.
Let's see. It was back about 1912. This is good. This is a good joke on me. You see.
Oh, it is.
I want to tell you that's a good one. And I'll make it kind of short.
No, shorten it.
Well, so 1912 in the fall, long in the fall, we had had moved in 1911 from Winston County, Alabama, down to Moca County.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of my sisters married a fella, and he had a dog, and I had two or three good ones, and a friend of mine had, we hunted together, he had one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd been telling about going back out about 15 miles, and we had to go with horse and buggies then, you know, and ride horses. So we trotted our dogs one Saturday up there, and about 15 miles, we got there. They'd all asked us about what kind of dogs we had, and we told them, after they'd run rabbits, and we told them no, and they hadn't been. And some of them 3 years old. So the moon was shining bright that night, and they all couldn't all wait. Well, we didn't care for letting our dogs. We let our dogs rest an hour or two, you know, before we started hunting. Well, it was 5 miles we had to go to strike a fox. And where they didn't a fox to run. So we got out to their dogs are used to running rabbits. And we got out about 200 or 300 yards to the house, and their dogs began running rabbits. We'd told them how it wasn't, and they didn't jump but a few rabbits. We kept going on till every dog we had we fell right in and helped run rabbits.
You know dogs too, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we got up there about right close to where the fox used, where I used to hunt when we lived up there. I told him, I said, well, I'm going to stop this rabbit running. I got out there and caught mine, and I tore them up. When I turned one loose, I told him, I said, you won't hear that on another rabbit. Just in a little bit, because some of them were tree possums, and one of them, I'd always hunted possums with him, and things like that, you see. And they struck and went to running. I told them, I said, that's not a fox. Well, my best fox dog's not barking much and not barking right. I said, that's a possum. A little bit to sit down in the barking tree. I said, if y'all want it, go and get it. I'll let you catch that. And they was wanting to buy one of this good best possum dog I had, tree dog. So went on out there, and this best fox dog I had didn't stay there but a little bit, you know. He done gone when we got there. So in a few minutes, I heard him open. Different bark all together. I'm going to bark like
that. You guess, huh?
And when I heard him open, he always barked a long bark, give a long note, and yodel. And this is the way he barked. He said, ooh, 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 ooh. Oh, 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 oh. And when he barked that way, it was always a fox. I says, y'all can put your dogs in, old lead stuck him. And so that they all began to go to him and begin to trail. And they
now
jumped.
He keeps that up all the time he running.
Yeah, he just kept it continuous, and when he smelled it, if he'd run a little bit over, he'd hush till he got back and straightened again.
Well,
wouldn't be but just a little bit of a distance between them and the barks, because they wouldn't run far over track.
Mm-hmm.
Some dogs run a long ways and lose, but they didn't. And there's two fox, and all of them, but this main best dog I had, he got one of his own, and they went back down in on Little Clark Creek, and they'd run up and down it. And we got out on a big ridge right out to where the crook of the creek come around. We got out there, and they'd run up and down on each side of that, come around close to us and back in there. We could hear them for about 3 hours. After a while, they kept coming and passing, and they just kept running the same pack together, and this one by himself. After a while, they came right down into a little holler, and all of them hushed. And they couldn't figure but one thing. They hunted all in there and I never could straighten it out anymore. Only way you could figure it was that the two frogs went in the hole and the dens together. And,
Well, that'd be possible, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, the good tree dogs, you know that when they'd come through that, see, they'd smell this fox on this side, you see, and they couldn't, and there's good tree dogs. But they couldn't find where he got went away from there.
Yeah.
And they hunted and circled all around up in there, and they never could. Took us about 2 hours to get them all to come out of there. And not one of them ever barked trees. And they're supposed to bark trees. And that's the only way we could figure that the fox done, the two fox come together in there. Because if it went on, well, some of those dogs would have found it. And
yeah,
I told them, I said, that's the only way it could have been. I was the oldest hunter in the whole bunch. Well, some of them was older than I was, but they hadn't hunted much.
Now, that's 1912?
Yeah, that's 1912. So that... It took us about 3 hours to get them to get the dogs out, and this main dog, old Lead, was the main dog in that.
Well, was that the dog's name?
Yeah, and that was the dog that won in 1914 over 40 dogs. And some of them had won 7 different counties. And he won on hunting, striking, trailing, speeding, driving, and endurance too.
Hmm.
And tonguing. He won every point that could be won. 100% over all the rest of them. And there wasn't a dog that no one else had wouldn't have been scratched today on the field trial. That didn't do something wrong, that the judges would have scratched. And being the man owned the dogs, two winning dogs, his is second and mine is first. We and the judges, and I carried them around, showed them where they was going to cross the roads, you know. And when they're crossing, we'd get down and let them see the dogs go across. So they could judge him.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we could tell, weren't enough in there, but we could tell by the bars. But, and the judges, I carried the judges right where they was going to cross because I knew where they was crossing at. And let them see them.
Yeah.
And we had three judges.
Yeah.
I don't want to get back on too much back on that second race.
Well, now.
So that. On that race of 1912, I wanted to tell a little about that. I'd always told my brother-in-law that my aunt, my father's sister, could cook the best cracked and cornbread that anybody ever eat. And he couldn't believe it. Because my mother and all of them were good cooks, but they cooked on a wood stove. And I says, now when we get there, I says, Aunt Texana's going to say, what do you all want to eat? She'd always ask me what I wanted to eat, you know. And we lived there until I was a pretty good sized boy, and about a half mile of them, and they just thought there wasn't nobody like us, you know. And the boys, we all played together and went to school together, you see. And we was getting up pretty well grown at that time, you see. Well, I'd made me about 16 years old. I was about 16 then.
Mm-hmm.
So that I'd started hunting around in that community in 1906. And I'd been a hunter ever since 1906. And hunted there and kept good dogs. My oldest brother kept good dogs then, but these was mine. I'd got up and got me some dogs, see, and he didn't have any.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I'll go ahead and finish telling you about the cornbread.
Yes.
When
I've been thinking about that.
My brother-in-law, he had laughed and he couldn't believe it, you know. And when we got there, I says, anything you have, just so you cook some cornbread, crackling cornbread, on the old spider on the fireplace was oak coals or hickory wood. I said, that's all I care. If you got that, I don't care whether you have anything else or not. Mm-hmm. Brother-in-law looked at me, you know, and kind of laughed, and he didn't know whether to laugh or not. We went to have dinner, passed him the cornbread, and he laughed, you know. And I said, have some of that good crackling cornbread. I said, I don't care where I get it, where I eat anything else or not. Well, she always had plenty to eat, you know. Vegetables and canned fruit and everything in the wintertime, they make a difference. And canned beans and everything that you'd want to eat. Plenty of good country corn-fed meat, too, to go with it. So that, passed it to him. He looked at me, I says, taste it. And he didn't know whether to taste it or not. And he turned and laughed. He says, that is the best bread I've reached. So you weren't kidding me. He says, I thought you was kidding me all the time about that good cornbread. He says, I'll never eat cornbread just like that. And I says, I know it. I says, I haven't either, because we don't cook on the fireplace anymore.
Mr. Weaver, if anybody had told you in 1912 that there'd ever be a time when you didn't have crackling bread, you wouldn't believe it in your lifetime.
No.
No, sir.
We had it. We had it every week or every when we took an ocean with crackling bread. We had it.
Yes, sir.
And I bought the stuff when I got married down here in Florida and tried to get my wife. She knew how to cook. She was reared in the country, and she was a good cook. I tried to get her to cook some, and she said, somebody may come in. I don't want to see it. That's just the way they feel.
Yeah.
I've thought about that. If I had lost so much money and went broke, the 90-day holiday bank business, and I had a lot of bank stock, well, you know what that done.
Mm.
And that's when they broke me and put me in debt, and I was sick too and worried, and I never could work enough to get out of it.
Mr. Weaver, you know the 30s, some people, I remember, just coasted through that and took trips and bought new automobiles.
Well, isn't that racket?
Most people I knew had a hard time.
Well, you see,
some of them couldn't hardly. They had so much. They was under so much debt.
Yeah.
They just couldn't hardly do nothing.
Well, you see, they hit me for over $8,000 all at once, and then I was sick and worried about that, and I'd. I spent a lot. I'd been in the hospital about three or four times. My wife twice, and had private rooms and everything. Well, I didn't notice that because I was going on working. You see, I didn't pay attention to that. That didn't work. That didn't hurt me. But see, when I got to where I couldn't work, you know, and just work a little every once in a while. And then spend so much for medicine and stay on a diet most of the time for 40 years.
And you
it's been rough.
You didn't know what was troubling you that to start with. You had ulcers and they was treating you for...
Seven doctors.
Yes. And what is it treating you for?
Malaria fever.
This is the end of the tape. Oh, way back in December 67, Tuesday the 14th of December. 1967. That goes on Channel 1. I've got it here, Mark 540. It's a little longer than that. I'd say it goes up to 550. Now I'm going to transfer from the Grundig a tape with no date. I didn't date it. It's from the Grundig, and it will go way back in 1967. These two sides, I think, of Mac Weaver from the Grundig, I'm transferring now, and this is about 555.
Ready? You take at these fields, on the field trials, if a dog comes up and stops, trots around close to anybody or crowd, 5 minutes to scratch him for loafing. call it loafing. And if he barks going to a dog, he can't bark but about 5 minutes until when the first turn loose, if the dude is scratching for babbling. And if he doesn't follow the track and stay in the pack, and go to run around and being cunning, they'll scratch him for cutting. Or
do many of them do that?
Yeah. Yeah, you find them do that. Some will bark on another dog's track, they'll scratch him for that.
Yeah.
And that's called babbling too, you see, but that's for a running dog track. And if he's too far behind and open on the fox track, they scratch him for opening on covered track. That's called covered track. It doesn't been run over.
Oh,
yeah. It takes good dogs to get by and dodge all those judges, 20 judges, you know, and not be scratched. The brother of the daddy of mine, two nights, all night running till next day, he won the Northwestern on two nights, all night running, growl running, they called it. That run till next day, you know. All night and next day, and they judged him, went to judge him at daylight the next day, you see. And he won the Derby. See, a Derby is from 1 to 2 years old. Then the next year he went back and won the All Age, and there wasn't but four finished the race. And he won the Derby right up on the front and finished when he was a Derby dog, and running with an All Age dog. Well, from 2 to 3 and 4 and 5 years old as usually, sometimes they run 8 years old on all age field trial. Sometimes they do.
What kind of hunting do you like the best? Do you like this field?
Yeah, I like to hunt anyway. Meet my friends and let's go and turn the dogs loose and just sport hunting.
I think if I was in there with so many dogs, you know, I think I'd be confused. But you're not, are you? You like it. You get used to it.
You could
know the dogs. And
I used to take a 40 in a pack, and I'd soon pick out any man's dog bark in there. I can't do it now. I can't hear it good now. But I used to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I hunted with a bunch of them over here at Simmons, Joe Simmons and Gibbons and Beatty from Gainesville, was Joe Simmons. They lived at Archer. And we hunted a great deal together, and Joe Simmons had a little girl about that high, went every fox hunting, he went nearly. And in, I'd say, 15 minutes, she could call anybody's dog's name and a big pack of dogs.
You mean just a little child?
Our little girl could do that the best. She was the only one I would figure could beat me, but she had me beat on that.
Yeah.
I had one called Little Julie that didn't let no dog beat. One that caught the big cat up here for Mr. Adams. And
now that he wasn't a walker.
No, she was a half walker.
Half walker.
She was a walker, Little July and Beagle crossed in it. That makes good dogs. Good running dogs.
The Beagle helps them.
Well, and it helps some in some ways. You take, if you've got dogs that's a little too fast and don't track run close enough, a little Beagle don't hurt them. In fact, all Walker dogs, way back yonder when I was breeding the Walker dog up, when Wes Walker was breeding it up, they had They got some Beagle in them.
Yeah.
They crossed them up, you know. They wanted the best fox dogs and different ones bred dogs to have. You take they wanted hunters that they go out and sit down and the dogs go on and hunt and strike a fox and jump it and run it. Lots of places you can't go in now. You take a lot of places in Tennessee. You can go out there fox hunting, but you got to get up on some of those hills to listen at them. Out there in West Tennessee, where you're from.
That's right.
A lot of places.
Yeah.
They can't drive, but they can go out there and turn those good wide hunters loose. Now, deer hunters don't want dogs like that. Deer hunters want dogs that will hunt close to them and won't run very long, and if deer leaves the country, they'll come right on back.
Uh-huh. I didn't know that.
And coon hunters, you don't want your dog to hunt too far from you, because the main thing, you coon hunt to catch the coon.
On your tree, you want
to. And you've got to go to it, and he's got to be able to bark trees. Well, walker dogs, a lot of them don't bark trees. We try to, fox hunters don't want the dogs to bark trees. And they stay very long, you see. They try to breed that out of them. Because, man, it hits the side of the fox that these fox dogs catch, you know, just run them down and catch them on the ground. Then a fox will get to dodging, and he'll make a missed dodge sometime running into a dog, you know. And maybe a dog get knocked out, and he's coming into the other dog, you know, and for a little bit, you know, he'll squat and make a lose or jump up on something, and the dog will be scattered around, he'll hunt for it, and the fox went this way, this dog will be a strike and goes that way, and he'll make a circle around and come back, and these dogs will circle around this way trying to pick him up, will be coming and going to this dog, you know, and run right into the fox and catch him, or a cat, they catch him that way.
Yeah. Looks like the dogs might have run into each other that way, too.
I seen this, I'm getting a lot of stores. I've been to many, and I'm just touching part of them, some of them. Now, I told quite a bit on that one hunt, you know.
Yeah.
And this Adams hunt, I told right smart on that one hunt.
Now, this hunt was way back before you come to Florida.
Yeah, that back in 14. That'll tell you on the days I'm giving you.
Mm-hmm.
Like 1914.
And those dogs you had up there, you left them there.
Yeah, and I tried to get them, ship them to me. You see, you didn't have cars, no highways then. It's country roads to travel.
Yeah.
It took you it used to take me 3 days to drive a team model up there. And it cost too much. You couldn't afford to be going up that much.
Yeah.
And I wanted them to ship my dogs, and my brother, oldest brother, and my cousins, they wanted to keep them all, and they kept them. I had three good ones, you know.
Yeah.
And so that I wanted to, if I'd have got them down, I'd have kept that breeding of dogs. But I lost them, and I got those two red specklings that I got in Alabama, some of the same breeding, but I didn't know it till I done got out of that breeding of dogs. I sold out and quit, you know.
Oh yes, over there at Micanopy, when you were so busy over there, you didn't have much. You didn't have time.
Oh, I didn't get to hunt much on a little in the summertime, and then when I was through the summer, you see, I barbered and run my barbershop and pool room, you see. Well, I'd go out hunting, you see, and I never would go hunting to leave my dogs in the woods. I'd try to go have somebody work in my place. So I could stay till I got all my dogs. It cost too much to run and hunt them off then.
Oh, yeah.
And you get them to where they wouldn't come back hunting for you.
Oh, yeah.
Get them there, maybe stop at somebody's house.
Yeah.
Or go the wrong direction.
And you'd have a hard time locating them
all. Yeah. Of course, back years ago, we didn't have much trouble with dog stealing. But now, it's pitiful. And killing, people kill your dog now. If few people shoot any dog across their property, well, you can't blame them for killing a dog doing damage.
Mean ones, or trained ones, and all.
Yeah.
They don't look at them to see what
they did. Yeah, any of them. Well, I try to cooperate with everybody and ask them before I let mine go on their property. You see, round close, because I never know, that fox may go through 4 miles. I've struck cats in around Ed Rush's place back over in yonder. We back out towards that route, way over in yonder.
Now, I don't know that country.
And you know where the dog, one of them got caught in a steel trap at? Up here at the Makinopa Junction. And I didn't find him nearly a week. And three nights, I was up down at Robert Williams blowing my horn, and my big fine registered stud dog came to me, and female didn't come, and called her Hater, and nigger had the flu and didn't go to his trap, and she stayed 3 days and nights in a steel trap for one toe call. She is a timid dog, and she didn't. But that toe, it broke that toe that where the trap hit, just about half an inch there. That place, piece of bone came out, and that toe went back down there and grew back together, but it was short.
Mm-hmm.
And she wept puppies in 5 days after that.
No.
And all the puppies was normal. I was afraid that they'd be running, but it didn't.
Well, what do you know? That's extraordinary.
Because she just accidentally stayed quiet, you know. Most of the dogs are just tore out, broke that toe and come on out right quick.
Oh, they would?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And Freddie got scared, but she wasn't a scared dog. She's just a timid dog and give up.
Yeah.
Didn't sing like that.
Yeah. Well, how'd you ever find her?
He went to his trap and found her in his trap.
Well, he found her.
And he knew me, you see, it was a nigger. Before you came here, I don't think you knew him. He lived back up, he lived over on Rob Wood's place, and he is trapping back up in there somewhere, and she happened to come along there, and when they run that cat from Ed Rush's back in here, you see, I wouldn't turn loose with it to steal trap if I knew it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In the trappers, I always cooperated with trappers. I'd ask them, where you trapping? I said, now, I don't care where you trap at, but I just don't want to go hunting around there with my dog. They get in the trap, it runs them sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Catch them up on the foot, runs the whole foot.
Mm-hmm.
And cause the leg to break, catch them up here sometimes, break, cause the leg to run off.
Mm-hmm.
And so that...
Oh, is Ed Rush, is he out in the Zetrower community?
He's halfway between McIntosh on that far road coming right up from the drugstore, right up going out towards that route.
Out towards Shiloh.
Yeah, you take that big, you know, it's a horse ranch now.
Yeah.
Ed Rush is dead. He and I used to hunt together. Now.
Yeah.
Him and Keith down here, Boardman, Frank Keith's brother and I hunted together. Well, in fact, I got the mother of those oldest dogs mine from him and Keith.
Now, I knew Frank Keith.
Well, Emily was Frank's brother.
Yeah.
But Emily stayed down there on the ranch all the time. Frank died here not long ago.
But Emily's still living?
Well, he's still living. I think he must be out in Arizona somewhere. He and his brother are going to make a trip. He went out last year in Arkansas. He's going to try to get out there and go to a lot of those fields hard. He hasn't any dogs now, but he still likes it, and he goes to those fields hard, and
yeah.
He goes off. They go out. He's both of them retired, you see, he and his oldest brother, too. Frank passed away about a month ago.
Yeah, I didn't know Frank was having any trouble.
Yeah.
Do you like to see the other people run their dogs? You
yeah,
do?
Yeah. Good sportsman does. Now, some, you know, they're selfish people of everything. And I like to hunt with a man because he may have a good dog in his pack that I want. And then if he decides to sell it, I always tell him to let me know. Or if I've got something that he wants and I like his the best, I'll swap with him.
Yeah. Keep him moving.
Yeah, now, well, I keep my pack like I want them. The tongues, one of the bark like, it's just like, you know, singing. When you get a good class together, singing sounds better. Different tones and songs.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way it is in fox hunting.
Yeah.
See, it's the musical sound that the dogs makes and running that a fox hunter likes.
Yeah, I can see how the voice would be just
Now, that's altogether different than these dogs sitting out here yelping all night and the same bark, yelp, yelp. I can't understand that.
Yeah.
If one of mine starts barking the same bark and he sits out there a little bit, boy, I'll get at him, I'll go out there.
Yeah.
I stop there. I don't let him bark for just a few times. I don't get after him barking all the time. You're getting where they won't bark and running to come to you. They'll be afraid you're going to get after them if they're running. And they'll quit and shy around, go around you, try to stay away from you.
Now, what's that? If you
scold them around home too much and
they're
barking.
Yes, yes.
If you, too much.
Yeah.
That's why it pays to train them when they're young and they don't bark as much around the place.
Oh, I see.
See, they used to run. If you hunt them regular, they'll lie down and rest instead of noticing a lot of things that when they're feeling good. See, I haven't been able to hunt these young ones I have. And in fact, they all don't belong to me. The other fellas got parts in them, but I get the dogs I want when I raise them. They furnished help me on the feed. And
I think it takes some help on the feed, all them dogs.
Well, it doesn't take as much as you'd think.
You have a special kind of feed that you like for them?
Yeah, I feed them Jim Dandy dog food mostly. I used to make my own feed and cook it myself. And put some cooked cornbread with flour and a lot of different things in it, and plenty of fried meat and grease and stuff. And boy, that is really
carries me back. You know, I have seen people cook for dogs just like that, and I hadn't thought about that in years.
Well, I put it 1/4 flour, then I put a good layer of had pans, 2 pans about like this when I cook for my dog. About this large around. And baking pans, you know, and there's about 2.5 inches tall, 2 and 2.5 inches tall. Well, I'd make up a small dish pan full of meal. And I'd put half in one, half in the other. And I'd have that floating with grease in there, and it'd come up around the ends. Then I spread some on top. And when I got up to I fixed that while I was, a lot of times I cooked breakfast, you know, when I was married. And if I didn't, I got up and I fixed that, and just as soon as we got, took cooked biscuits or bacon, just as soon as we got to cooking the breakfast, I had my meal made up, you know, and I set it in there, and before I left, I put so much kerosene in the stove.
Yeah.
And I just went on to work, you know, and when I got back, I changed top from top to bottom, you see, and that would be well cooked, and I got back brown just like I wanted it, you know, cooked for me, and it didn't bother.
I want to get it straight. I was getting sort of tired listening when we were talking about it, and I didn't quite get it straight. And the way.
Well, this is a good tape. All right, now, Mac, we was telling how he used to make a dog feed himself. Now, I'll go ahead this is Channel 1, right. Now, I'll go to Channel 1 over, and this is transferring a tape from the Grundig. I'll go now from, this is Channel 1, right, and I'll go now to Channel 1 over. And continue this tape I'm transferring from the Grundig. I have no idea the date. Not now, at any rate. I guess I could look it up.